Hey everyone, Bob WP here, and welcome to Woo Biz Chat. We do the Woo Podcast Show. Woo! Woo! Woo Biz Chat is sponsored by OmniSend. OmniSend is a solution for email and SMS marketing with their CRM solution for WooCommerce shops or your own website while saving time with pre-built automation that drives sales. And Airwallex, the online payment plugin, allows you or your clients to localize your WooCommerce store checkout experience by enabling customers to pay with preferred currencies and payment methods. I'll tell you more about our sponsors later in the show, but let's dive into another Woo Biz Chat.
Well, hey everyone, welcome to another Woo Biz Chat here on Do the Woo. My name is Marcus Burnett, and I'm a community marketer with GoDaddy. I'm here today, as always, with my wonderful co-host from Barn 2 Plugins, Katie Keith, and we've roped in the man behind the curtain himself, Bob Dunn. How are you both doing today?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Good to talk to you. And very excited to have Bob on as well.
They let me out of my cage, so, you know, Katie can do that. It's great to be here.
Got to join us every once in a while. Well, we're going to be chatting about the WordCamp experience with US coming up and how to make the most of your time and money as a business, whether you're attending, sponsoring, or maybe even watching from afar. We can talk about that as well. I was going to say, maybe to start, we'll assume for the purposes of this conversation that people know what a WordCamp is and have decided to bring their business. So we'll kind of start with that baseline and talk a little bit about just maximizing the time, maximizing the spend, and all of that. How does that sound to you all?
Yeah, that sounds good. Should be interesting.
Yep.
Awesome. I guess I'll just kick it off for all of us to chat about WordCamp as a concept, as a group of sessions, and there are sponsors and there are parties and all of that stuff. How do you balance what to attend, especially when it comes to sessions? There are a lot to choose from, multiple tracks. How do you pick and choose what makes the most sense to attend at a WordCamp?
Yeah, it's easy to feel quite torn in many different directions at a WordCamp. At the big ones, you've got multiple tracks running alongside each other. And then, of course, all the time, there is the hallway track as well. So you need to look at the schedule and think of those maybe four different things, three tracks plus general networking. Oh, and the sponsor hall. So you could argue that's five. Which of those do you do at any given moment? And then in addition, you've got all the party. I remember when I started going to WordCamps, it was really just like the after party. But now I think every WordCamp I go to, there are more side events being organized of all different scales by many different companies of different sizes. And a lot of those are open to everybody to register. And I think in WordCamp Europe this year, there were probably three or four parties running in the same building simultaneously on the first night of the conference. So it was like going between different parties and ethical dilemmas of what if you can't go to one and you've taken a place by registering. So it is a fine juggling act, yeah.
Yeah, I think especially for anybody new, it is finding that right balance and not totally being worn out by the end of day one or something. It's a bit challenging and you probably want some downtime too. So I think that's important. Some of us fill up our cards, our dance cards per se, and you know, we're going from one place to another. And I think the sessions are really nice in the sense of not only are they great educationally wise, but for people that need a little bit of downtime to get out of the social atmosphere and they want to maybe just be able to sit and relax, a session's great because you can sit there, you can enjoy, you can learn. So there's a lot of stuff. Unfortunately, I don't make most of the sessions, but I do fill up the side vents. I fill up the card on that. I try not to overlap too much or I disappoint somebody if I'm taking a spot. You know, I don't want to be doing that. But yeah, it's a hard thing to really, sometimes it's that experience. The first time you've got to see how it goes. From there on, you start to get what works for you and what doesn't.
Yeah, A lot of advice I've heard from people is that the sessions will almost always end up online for you to watch later, so skip them and go network. Do you think that that is solid advice? Do you think there's a worthwhile reason to look at the schedule and find sessions that you probably should attend? You don't have the opportunity to ask questions of a speaker necessarily if you're watching it later, where you might be able to ask questions during the session. Do you think it's worth, I guess the question is that good advice, or should people still look at the schedule and find time to at least attend a few sessions?
Yeah, I feel a bit torn because I recently was a speaker for the first time, but generally sessions are not an important part of a WordCamp for me. They cover things that you can access at any time of the year, either by reading blog posts or ebooks or real books or listening to podcasts like this. There's information like the same as what you get in talks wherever you look these days. It's really excellent how much the WordPress community produces that you can learn from. And then, as you said, Marcus, you can watch things later. There is sort of something to be said for going in person, but I feel that's a missed opportunity. And I love what Bob said about it's a kind of a break. I go to sessions for an introvert break and I might learn something, but yeah, that's track six. I said there was four or five tracks, but the introvert track is the other one, which might be a wellness room. For me, it's often just going back to my hotel room for half an hour. For that reason, actually, I like to stay at the venue if it's a hotel where possible, because you can just escape if you need a bit of a break and then come back down into the thick of it. But I find that the networking, both with people I already know and people I haven't met yet, is the most valuable part of attending a WordCamp, and that the sessions, therefore, aren't as important unless I need a break.
Yeah, I think that it's, again, what you're going there for. And I think maybe saying in the way of that they are online, so being aware that they're online, if something happens, you cannot make it, you get in the conversation, you don't want to end it, that's a great alternative, because you do have that option. But like Katie said, I think there's also some people too that they like to immerse. That's how they learn, to immerse themselves in the actual room, listening to it versus doing it online. So I think it's a good recommendation more than a suggestion, like, hey, you can go there, but if you can't make every session, they are online. And like you said, everybody's going to make their choice. Sometimes I feel really bad when somebody asks me, oh, did you come and see my session? And then you fall back. Oh, well, I will catch up online.
I do go to sessions if it's somebody I know, because I'm supporting them, and it's sort of different motivation, isn't it?
Yeah, that makes sense, but also becomes harder and harder as you get to know more and more people.
True. We do know a lot of speakers by now.
Yeah, and you mentioned that you recently were able to be a speaker. One of my questions I had for you, and I'll ask Bob too, because he's been a speaker, do you feel like there's a strong business case for applying to speak? Did you feel like that was, I guess, did you feel like that was worthwhile for your business? Did you do that because, you know, you wanted to have that as an accolade, as something that you've done under your belt personally? I guess just, and then talking about whether or not people are even attending sessions, is there a good business case for applying and being accepted to speak and being a speaker at a WordCamp event?
Well, it's interesting because I didn't particularly want to be a speaker, but so I do the WP Product Talk podcast with Matt Cromwell and two other people, but Matt particularly invited me to apply to speak with him. And I kind of just said yes without really thinking about it or whether I actually wanted to. I just thought, yeah, that would help promote the podcast. Let's go for it. And then we were accepted. And I was like, oh, I've never spoken to a big group. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with this. But I wasn't going to drop out or anything. So I did lots of practicing and it went really well. So, but reflecting on it afterwards, actually, I realized that it was valuable to the business to be a speaker, and particularly in comparison with sponsoring. And I know I upset a few people, which I regret afterwards, because I tweeted or something that having sponsored the previous year and then been a speaker the following year, I felt that my company had similar exposure from the two things. Also, there were six of my team members walking around in the Bright Barn 2 t-shirts, and that plus being a speaker and I was on a discussion panel, I tweeted that I felt maybe Barn 2 had as much exposure from that as sponsoring. And then lots of people quite rightly got upset that we need to be encouraging people to sponsor and not saying it's not necessary. So I would say they are different ways of achieving exposure for your company. Sponsoring is one way, which undeniably does that. But yes, being a speaker does help you get exposure, particularly if you can think of a topic to talk about, which is in some way not directly promotional, but is relevant to what you do. Because I was talking about how to build a product company, which is nothing to do with the plugins that I sell. So if you can think of something a bit more relevant, like if you sell WooCommerce extensions, your talk can be about WooCommerce to help you position yourself as an expert in that field particularly, then I think that could possibly help with sales, maybe not in the short term, but in the long term, people would recognize you and your company more and be more likely to become a customer. So I would say that there is a business benefit of being a speaker.
Yeah, I'd argue that talking about building a product company is relevant in the sense that I like to know who I'm buying products from. And so knowing you and your company better would be good for business overall. And we'll talk about the sponsorship piece in a moment, but I want to give Bob a chance too. Bob, I know your business is a little bit different. You're not a product company or an agency, although you've done both of those things too, I believe. Do you feel like there's a business case to speaking? Whether is it just exposure or is it part of the long-term game, the long game of hoping that people recognize you and want to purchase from you down the line? Or is there maybe a more direct business case for it?
Yeah, I think that I wish I could remember my first time speaking. I need to go to a site that will tell me that, which we're all familiar with, Marcus's site. But yeah, so it was early, I don't know if it's 2011, 12, 13. I did it and yeah, forced myself to do it because at that point I wasn't really into speaking to large groups. I tried to do it at a few other conferences too, but it was personal branding for me. I was doing a lot of training back then, blogging. That was it, basically a lot of training. And for me, it was a good way to brand myself because obviously what I talked about was what I talked about in my tutorials or my videos or whatever. So it was certainly something I did for a few years. And then there came a point where I didn't want to brand myself or continue to brand myself, but I just got to the point where I thought, I think I'm done speaking at WordCamps. And I think that decision partly came too because I'd done it for a few years and how many people apply to those. And I thought, why am I continuing to take up a space there? And so I kind of stepped back and I prefer not speaking now. I enjoy going to WordCamps, but I would encourage anybody to do it and see how it works for you too personally. You know, it's not always the easiest thing for anybody to do, or a lot of people to do, to get up and stand in front of a crowd like that. But I've talked to many people that have been very stressed. I'll just divert to a little short story. Years ago, I was at a WordCamp, a local WordCamp. There was a guy sitting on the, and I'm not going to mention him, but he's very known in WordPress space, but he was sitting on the floor by himself. And I asked him what was wrong. And because he looked a little stressed, he says, I'm speaking for the very first time and I don't think I should have done this. So I sat down on the floor next to him. We just started talking. And I said, you know, the people are pretty forgiving. And this is quite a few years ago, but I think they still are. I said, go in there, do your thing. And eventually he did. I don't know if I really made him feel any better about it. But afterwards, somebody did come up to me after it. And without even asking them, they said, hey, the guy was a little nervous, but boy, the information was great. He did a really good job. So I went back and told him. You know, I thought he should hear that. And, you know, he did smile. He said, wow, you know, that's great to know. But yeah, it's something you got to, for a lot of people, make yourself do. But yeah, I think it's, yeah, again, it really depends on the person. And if that's what you're comfortable with, and if you feel you really want to build that brand, whether it's your company's brand or your personal brand.
Yeah, if you're profile is up to date fully. Your first talk was in 2011 at WordCamp Seattle. So,
oh, wow.
Been a little bit, but you've spoken plenty of times since then. Yeah, I spoke as well last year, I think it was, at WordCamp Phoenix. And I appreciated, I guess, the exposure. I appreciated the way that it opened up opportunities for people to ask you questions. I think that was more beneficial than most anything else, was now you're a name on the sheet and a face that people have seen that, for better or for worse, makes you an expert in at least the topic that you were talking about, but also, you know, by the nature of it, WordPress expert in the WordPress expert circle. And so, you know, kind of gives opportunities for you to have people approach you and ask questions and say, you know, I want to learn more about XYZ. And if you're a business, that opens up doors for you to talk about. Like Katie was saying, if your talk was about something related to your business, there's obviously an open door there to then talk about some of the products or services that you sell as well, to say, you know, hey, I understand that problem. I've come across it lots of times. We've actually built a product that helps with that problem. Let me tell you about it. And with the sales process kind of comes to you a little bit in that regard. And I think that's helpful as well. It is something that you have to apply and be accepted for. So let's talk about the other direction, which is sponsorship, which you pay into, right? As a business, you can also pay to be a sponsor. That guarantees you a spot in the sponsor hall, whatever that may look like. It's a little different based on the size of the conference, but that gets you guaranteed access to attendees to talk a little bit about what you do. I don't want to open the controversy box again with Katie there on whether you should or shouldn't, but maybe we can talk a little bit about the business case for sponsoring a little bit, and what do you get? I know that, Katie, you've sponsored in the past. Bob, I know that you've sponsored in the past. I'm part of the GoDaddy team that sponsors globally all of the WordCamps, so maybe we can chat just a little bit about the business case for sponsoring WordCamp events, and we'll start with you, Katie.
I think we can all agree, and this is well documented now, that sponsoring does not generate enough direct sales in the short term to cover the cost of sponsorship. However, there are still other benefits, particularly if you have the kind of marketing strategy and accompanying budget where you are going for general brand awareness within the WordPress community, which, for example, hosting companies, that's very important that they're seen big players supporting the community and so on, that being there has a symbolic importance as well as directly getting people to know your brand over time. So I think there are benefits, but you shouldn't sponsor a WordCamp if you think it's going to generate more sales than it costs straight away and that you'll be able to measure that. Like last year when I sponsored for the first time, I did a sale, 50% off sale, and gave everybody leaflets with coupon codes, and we made literally zero sales from that. And I know because nobody used that coupon, I can track that. So it is not a direct ROI, but people must be more familiar with our brand. Hundreds and hundreds of people talked to us over the 2 days. We did product demos. People asked, existing customers asked questions, which might have helped to boost their loyalty over time and their likelihood of being retained and renewing. There's lots of indirect benefits, but you're never going to measure them.
I sponsored Do the Woo sponsored, and it was, you know, actually several people came up to me and asked me, why are you sponsoring? They couldn't quite understand it because I'm not selling a product. I'm basically saying, hey, come and listen to our shows, you know. And I thought about it long and hard. I had a little experience with being able to take over a booth at WordCamp US last year. So then after that experience, I decided to try WordCamp Asia and WordCamp Europe. And one thing is, yeah, your expectations. You've got to understand what to expect. And can this bring enough value to you for brand awareness? And that was one big part of it, was to make people aware of the podcast. I'd also, you know, it's easy to say, hey, go spend whatever amount of money out there you need to spend to be a sponsor. But I also had my sponsors. I talked to them about me sponsoring at least a couple of the flagship sponsorships. So I got that money through my sponsorships where I could sponsor, which is kind of meta. So, but anyway, it was incredibly valuable for me because of not just being a podcast, but being what the podcast stands for with the community. I mean, it became more of a community table. I know that Katie was able to spend some time at it, and people just come up and talk about things. They don't always be needing to talk about a podcast show. You know, Katie was catching people she maybe hadn't seen yet. Because we were in a very nice location, especially at WordCamp Europe, where people were passing by. And I had several people later on say, hey, you know, I was going to stop by and say hi, but there were so many people around your booth that I just thought, well, maybe I can catch another time. And they said, we just saw you constantly busy. And it wasn't necessarily, again, selling or talking about the podcast endless on and on and on. But when somebody would be able to come up and say, hey, you know, what's your podcast about? And I had all these stickers out for the different shows. And so I'd get talking to them. And I'd say, well, what do you do? And I'd give them the sticker of the show that I thought fit them because they maybe wouldn't want to listen to them all. So it was a very good investment for me and a good investment for the growth. I think Katie said something like that. If you can find the right strategy and you find the value, and the value equals what you have to spend, especially in the case of Katie or GoDaddy. I mean, I set myself, you know, and I was basically it. And then some of the hosts were there, but you've got a team that you've got to fly there or whatever. You've got a team that you got to put in the hotel, feed, all this stuff. So there's, you know, a lot of added expense besides just that dollar amount you're looking at for the sponsorship. So it's a good value if you know what you're getting into.
Whether you're a product or a site builder, OmniSend can help you with your customer or client's email and SMS through their CRM solution for WooCommerce. Product builders can bring their plugins and SaaS to a new level for their customers by integrating with OmniSend. And for you developers and agencies, recommending them to your clients for managing their customer relationships is spot on because it gives them the right tool to build their email and SMS lists, send targeted campaigns, create automation workflows, and track their results all from within their WordPress dashboard. With over 100,000 e-commerce stores already on board, have your clients and your customers get started for free by simply having them search for the OmniSend plugin on WordPress.org. The AirWallex online payments plugin allows you to localize you or your client's WooCommerce store checkout experience so any size business is able to grow without borders. Setup takes minutes, and you'll find improved checkout conversion rates by offering Apple Pay, Google Pay, and 60 plus local payment methods. And since customers are not redirected to a different checkout page, that info is saved, and you can offer recurring payments with WooCommerce subscriptions. What really stands out with AirWallex is merchants are not forced to convert foreign incoming payments to their home market currencies, and those funds can be used to pay suppliers internationally. So, literally, you save money all around. It's all there at airwallex.com.
Yeah, for something like WordCamp US, I don't even want to talk about the amount of money that GoDaddy spends to sponsor and have team members and all of that there. And the ROI is impossible to either track long-term or make up in immediate sales. WordCamps are generally not sales events. We aren't salesy. When people come up to the booth, we're happy to talk about the things that we're doing in, you know, with WordPress and at GoDaddy and share as much information as people are interested in listening to. But it's not a sales event. We all kind of know that. And so making that up is nearly impossible. That being said, you know, and we could probably do an entire episode, or I think maybe we even have done an episode about why or why not to sponsor. There's, you know, other parts to sponsoring WordCamp in the sense that one of the big reasons that we're global sponsors and continue to be large sponsors at flagship events is just to to show the community that we're here and invested in the community. There's clearly an investment cost there that isn't recouped in sales. That is just us saying, you know, we want to see this project, this ecosystem, this community succeed. We're going to, you know, put our dollars behind it and show up big and have lots of people come with us to meet the community and be part of the community and contribute, be part of Contributor Day and all of that stuff. That being said, I also wonder kind of the flip side that I always ask myself and ask people when we start to talk about, you know, whether we should or shouldn't be at any particular WordCamp is there a cost to not being at a WordCamp? We've clearly discussed not financial, but kind of like a reputation cost. You know, does showing up one year and not showing up the next year look like, oh no, I don't know what's going on with that company. They must not be doing well. They decided not to sponsor. You know, were they not able to sponsor? Did they, you know, are they pulling back from the community? That kind of thing. I wonder what you both think about that. If there are thoughts of what the cost is to not being a sponsor, especially, I guess, if you've been a sponsor before. I guess if you've never been a sponsor, then, you know, are you irrelevant already is the first question. And if you were a sponsor and then you aren't a sponsor in the future, is there a level of people thinking that you're on your way to irrelevance? I don't know. I think there's a psychological piece to it, too. And I wonder what you all think about that, whether there's a cost to not being a sponsor or not being there at all. Like, Katie, I know that you weren't a sponsor, but you still showed up and were there and were a speaker and had team there and they were walking around in their shirts. So, you know, clearly not irrelevant, clearly there to support the community. But I wonder if there's a cost to not showing up.
I think it depends on your line of work. I think the main types that can be hurt by not sponsoring is hosting companies, because it's almost like an arms race to show who's the biggest and has the biggest booth. Does the type of booth fit with people's perceptions of your scale of company? And it can go both ways. So you kind of do need to choose wisely, both whether to just not be sponsoring, and if you are, is it going to make you look good or bad, basically? Whereas I think there's nothing wrong with a small booth if you're a small company. Like at Barn 2, I feel it fits reputation or whatever. I don't think, as far as I know, any eyebrows will be raised for having the small booth. Same with Do the Woo. It's a community booth. You're not a product company, Bob. So I think it makes sense for you to have that level. But the big companies need to think about that.
That's interesting, because I've thought of it, but I've never thought of it in the question that Marcus said, because it's, yeah, it is perception. And I guess where that perception comes is probably more for the core community, too, is like the people that see you all the time and know about you all the time, as opposed to maybe new people to WordPress.
Yeah, it's interesting for sure. And, you know, it's, as someone who is largely in charge of running, you know, a big booth for a hosting company at like flagship events and stuff, it's definitely something that we do think about, right? What is the perception? What is the perception in the giveaways that we're giving away? I mean, there's definitely the perception aspect to all of it, right? The design of the booth has to be on par of a large brand or whatever. Yeah, sometimes that's good. Sometimes that's bad. Sometimes we want to look more corporate than we are. Sometimes we want to look less corporate than we are. More approachable, less approachable. And there's just a lot that goes into it.
You know, it's interesting because that could actually flow over into the perception of side events, too. Why is this person doing this huge side event and this hosting company is having a smaller whatever? Is that another perceived idea that, oh, they're kind of cutting back because of whatever? Speaking of side events, I'm curious, and this kind of gets away a little bit from the sponsorship, but I was talking to Katie a little bit about it. Is I wonder if, do either of you ever strategically plan side events? Or is it just, hey, I'm going, I'm going to sign up for this one, I'm going to do this and just party and or meet people and have fun? Or is there some other little method to your madness?
Yeah, in my case, I'm, you know, on the clock at camps basically from the time that I that my plane touches down to when I get back to the airport and head out. And so, you know, the side events for me are just as much hallway track and networking as any other part of the event, but it is definitely far more casual and easier to jump into conversations. The networking doesn't necessarily mean we're talking business, but I am getting to know people, creating those relationships and forming friendships with, you know, people that I've seen at a few camps and deepening relationships, or people that I've seen for the first time, or people that I've talked to online a bunch of times and we finally get to meet up in person. So a part of it is trying to figure out where are some of the people that I want to have conversations with going? What are their plans? Where are they headed? Some of it is, you know, knowing some of the other side event organizers and them asking me specifically, hey, I'd love for you to drop by. And then I try to make an attempt to make it to those events. There comes a time where there's so many of them that they sort of overlap, or even are in the same building, and then you're playing that like classic TV show where you're trying to be in two or three places at once. So you're zipping out the back door to drop down to another party for 30 minutes, and then you're coming back up. You're like, I just went to the bathroom real quick. And trying to, you know, keep conversations going and stuff. As far as strategy wise goes, I'm there at those to basically just deepen relationships and talk to people and have a good time. And obviously the benefits of that spill out past the WordCamp event, where I can have conversations back online with folks, but know them a little bit better and other personalities and all of that, and have better conversations and stuff. As far as like time management strategies, that's so difficult because you have to map out where each of the events are and what time they're happening and when they start and when they end and how far one is from the other. And, you know, I don't have energy for all of that, but I try to make sure that I'm getting to the events, especially if someone has specifically asked me like, hey, I'm going to be at this event and I'd like to chat with you for, you know, for some time. Are you going to be there? Would you make it there? And then I'll try to make it there and I'll have a conversation with those folks.
Yeah. I think with the side events, my strategy has definitely relaxed over the years. When I first started going to WordCamp, I would always make a point of wearing the Bantu t-shirt to all the side events, even like costume things, like where the after parties would often say wear costume. I was like, nope, I want to be in my Bantu t-shirt and I want it to say for the front and the back what my company is, because then people are more likely to come up to me if they know who we are. And I think if you are trying to raise awareness and you don't know that many people, that is a good strategy. I don't particularly do that anymore at the side events, because I've all networked out by then after the daytime when I was wearing the t-shirt, and I know enough people that there will be people to talk to all evening without needing to advertise my company. And people know me more anyway from the podcast and Twitter and what photos and whatever. So I don't do that, but I would recommend it if you're just starting out. And also, the parties vary in terms of how loud they are. And really, it's best to do them as networking events. So the after party, everybody constantly feeds back. They need a quiet room, but they're often very bad at that. They'll be fine this year at WordCamp US because it's in a museum again, like last year's. But WordCamp Europe after party was too loud this year, for example, despite feedback saying that they needed quiet areas. So if you just want to talk to people and network, find the quieter parties, which you can do by thinking about the location. Is it at like a nightclub, or is it in a restaurant or a cocktail bar or something that's going to be quieter? So that's good. And I heard an interesting tip, which I've never implemented, which is that if you've got multiple team members, send different team members to different side events so that your team has representation across more of the community. I think that's kind of a shame, because one of the big benefits of WordCamps that we haven't talked about is bringing your team together. It may be that you don't have company retreats. We don't have company retreats. We just bring each team member to their local flagship WordCamp, and that's a really good bonding experience for people. And so that's another reason to go to WordCamp. So I'm not sure I'd want to separate them out at a side event, but I can see the business benefit in terms of marketing of doing so.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, at least I thought, I'm like Marcus, if somebody says, you know, are you going to be at this event? I'd love to talk. I try to make an effort to be there. And I'm a little bit more lax on, as long as I'm not, I said overlapping and not showing up. I sign up for quite a few of them because I also find that often the opportunity comes to meet somebody that I haven't met yet at WordCamp. Maybe, you know, catching up, or I don't know them at all, just happen to run into them. Say I'm going to this event because I know more people at it or because of the brand or whatever. I find myself signing up for just about any event that comes my way that I have time for because, you know, what else am I going to be doing, sitting in my room or something? So I might as well be out meeting people. So yeah, I don't necessarily have much of a strategy. I do find that I do end up leaving if I can't hear what somebody's saying. I think when you're at, I don't know where it was in Athens, I think one party I damaged my hearing even more than it already is. But it's hard to communicate for some of us in those situations. And I will likely make my way to another party if it becomes a point where I just cannot have a conversation at all. But yeah, I think it's going to all depend what works for you and what is right for you. And you like, you know, some of that stuff. I've had people actually say to me that they went to an after a side event and they found out it was almost too overwhelming. It was even more so than the WordCamp because there was just too much socializing and they were ready for some downtime and stuff. So you just got to kind of play it by ear and decide what works for you. So,
yeah, my last side event question was going to be, we sort of all agree that they're good networking opportunities. Do you tend to talk shop at those or not? Or does it depend? Are you looking to just hang out and get to know people, you know, who they are a little bit better? Are you offended if people come up to you and ask to talk shop? How do you handle those conversations?
I go with the flow. I'm happy to do either and to allow people to lead. Sometimes I'll be meeting new people and you may end up talking shop because you've done some, perhaps some collaboration with them in the past online and you've not met in person. Or you might use it as a chance to get to know each other personally, which helps to strengthen your professional relationship. Or other side events, I end up speaking with people I already know well and already know everything about their businesses. So we would be talking about other things then. So I think unless you have a really clear strategy, which is fine, you can go with the flow and see what happens.
Yeah, whatever way the wind blows, however it works. Although it was very ironic that the first three flagships I went to after we moved to Portugal, 90% of the people walk up to me, the first question out of their mouth is, how is Portugal? So I repeated that story numerous times for three different flagship WordCamps, at least probably maybe hundreds of times and stuff. So I didn't talk shop a lot because people didn't care about that. All they wanted to know was how the move and how Portugal went.
That's what happens if you're famous and have an interesting story.
What is, I know we could go on and on. Is there like a little tip or strategy that you found works? You know, it doesn't kind of fall into the norm or something that just helps people that are going and trying to navigate, whether it's a first time or they're within their first few WordCamps and they're still trying to find out the right thing to do.
Yeah. So I'll take it from the introvert's perspective, because as weird as it is for me to have a job where I go to WordCamps and talk to people, I am more introverted by nature. So what I do, what I find is extremely helpful, is I'll get wherever the camp is, at least kind of the day before everything starts happening, and give myself a few hours to just leave on my own and go explore the city, go explore just outside the city. If there's, you know, like WordCamp US is in Portland this year, there's great places to go hiking and see some stuff outdoors as well. Just get away from everyone else for a couple of hours, because the entire event is going to be very people-y. You're going to be nonstop talking to people from the time that registration starts to the time that the side event after party or whatever ends. And so you're talking at least a day, but in many cases, multiple days worth of just being around, being surrounded by people and talking to people constantly. And so I generally try to just get away for a couple of hours by myself. I'll grab either my camera or just have my phone on me and just go out away and take pictures and walk around and just enjoy the silence, I guess, for a little bit. And then that really prepares me to be in a headspace to talk to people for many hours at a time. And so I highly recommend doing that for anyone who's mildly introverted, I guess, just to give yourself some time to be on your own before you get into being around everyone else for that long of a time.
Well, that definitely applies to the majority of people who attend WordCamps as well, probably unlike conferences in some other industries, but that is definitely the case with WordCamp attendees as a whole. So my advice would be to do with networking. If you don't already know people at a WordCamp, you need to understand it's the sort of place you can just go up to somebody and talk to them. Just, it doesn't matter what you say. Just, oh, hey, I'm so-and-so, what do you do? People are open to that. And I say this even as a woman in a male-dominated industry. People don't think it's strange if you just go up to people and talk to them. They also don't act inappropriately. It's just everybody is friendly and accepts that it's a networking event and you can do that. So even if you're like quite shy and you've never been to a WordCamp before, do that. Because I think you could listen to Marcus and say, well, I don't know anyone. I'm not going to spend all day talking. Actually, you should just go in the sponsor hall and go up to the sponsors. You may get in conversations with people near the sponsor booths as well. That's a good place for networking if you don't already know people. So do end up talking to people and try and remember them. I'm really bad at this. You talk to so many people and then you're probably going to have some kind of contact through collaborations or link exchanges or whatever kind of partnership work you do with other people or hiring them or being hired by them or any of these things at some point in the future. They may well remember you and you don't remember them. And that happens to me all the time. And so try and write down who you've talked to or something and keep that. Because you never know when you need a bit of help with the memory, because it is overwhelming.
Yeah, good to take a picture of a selfie or take a picture of them. Then you can zoom in on their name tag if it's not flipped over and you can see their name at least.
Good advice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've done that a few times. And a little bit of piggyback on the networking. What I always tell people is visit all the vendors, all the sponsors. And it's kind of two-part. One is they're not going to be, like Marcus said, you know, none of them are like these huge high sales pitches. You know, you may have experience at other conferences that you've gone to. They do like to talk and you never know what will happen in a conversation. That's just what was Katie saying, going up and talking to people. You never know what kind of connection you're going to make, what may happen down the road, what kind of a friendship you might build. So make sure and do that. And another thing I learned early on to do is, as you're looking at the sponsor list, if there's a sponsor that you're not familiar with, they're a new name and you're like, especially some of the smaller sponsors will be that way. And you think, oh, you know, is this somebody I should know about? Go and check out their website. And if it's somebody that you think would be worth getting to know better, or maybe it's a product or a service that you're thinking you're really finding valuable, learn a little bit about their business, just enough to be able to walk up to them and not say, hey, what do you do? Say, you know, hey, I checked out your site and I noticed you do these couple things and I'm kind of interested in that one part of it. And probably a lot of sponsors go, wow, you know, this person actually took the time and the conversation is going to go a lot more smoother. And you don't want to do that with every sponsor, you know, do the research, but there might be some that you maybe you want to become an affiliate or maybe you want to be, you know, something you have in your mind, you might segue into a conversation knowing a little bit about them better than just asking, what do you do?
Yeah, that's good advice. And linked to that, we haven't mentioned the attendee list that you can read through a list of the people who are going beforehand. It's a long list. There are thousands of people on it. But if you're just starting out and you don't know who you want to meet with, it's a really good idea, I think, to spend half an hour reading through it and just seeing what names jump out at you. It might be individuals' names that, I don't know, you follow on Twitter or have had some kind of contact with or seen in a podcast or doing a talk at a previous WordCamp, anything to make you recognize them and think maybe you want to reach out beforehand and arrange to connect with them. Or alternatively, you might recognize their company name and think, actually, yeah, I could get some business benefit from having an in-person connection with someone from that company. So the attendee list is another way to do that, as well as the sponsors. So that's been great. I think we've covered a lot of different angles of how to get the most out of a WordCamp, whether you're sponsoring, speaking, or just attending. So I hope everybody has a great time at WordCamp US, and we'll all be there. And yeah, hope it's useful.
Hey, I'd like to thank our sponsors, Airwallex and OmniSend, once again for their support of WooBizChat. And if you are going to WordCamp US, several of our hosts will be there, including the three of us who are on today's episode. And do make sure and stop by Sponsor Booths, who are also sponsors of our shows here at Do The Woo. OmniSend, Hostinger, Avalara, GoDaddy, Cloudways, Weglot, and our newest sponsor, Kinsta. As well as our partners, WordPress.com, Woo, and Jetpack. Say hi to them and thank them for supporting the Do The Woo community. So hope to see you there, and until the next time.